time to read, you know, all those pages this week. We have a couple of visitors here with us this evening. Glad that you're here. Let me point out that the picture you see on the screen is of the Chronological Study Bible cover with, you know, the white information added, but that's the cover of the Chronological Study Bible. And this congregation on Wednesday night is pursuing the reading of the entire Bible in 18 months, using as our text the New King James Version, which is called the Chronological Study Bible, because the material is rearranged into chronological order. So, rather than reading the Bible in kind of the jumbled manner that the 66 books are, you know, collated in most Bibles, where they aren't taking note of the natural flow of history, now this material is being rearranged and reads hopefully more like a sort of a novel. What we've been seeing, of course, we just completed Genesis and Exodus, is that in Genesis and Exodus, was there much rearranging being done? There wasn't any rearranging being done. When your Bible begins, it is in chronological order. Begins with what? Creation, and then leads us through, so that's principally four men, though quite a few others, and important others are there. But in the early going, who's the principal man that we have the most information about? First 11 chapters. That is Noah. And we've had creation, we've had the first sin in Adam and Eve, we've had the death, you know, the murder in the family, we've had quite a bit, but the most we hear about is the flood. Why was there a flood? Sin. Sin had so overcome the earth that God could stomach it no more, and he saw that every breathing thing was to die, save for one family, a total of eight souls, who built the ark exactly as God told them to, and then were rescued. But what are those 11 chapters really all about? Genesis, what's the word mean? It's beginnings. Beginnings of a lot of things are set forth there. But in chapters 1 through 11, what we have is an understanding of where things came from, how bad sin is, and then one short little story that really is about the same thing. How bad sin is. What happened at Babel? Say, well, the languages were all changed, and that's correct. Why did that happen? Because the people had rebelled against God's plan. They did not want to do what he had told them to do. So they decided they were going to settle in one place rather than populating the earth as they had been told to do. So sin is playing a major role in that. Then comes chapters 12 through 24. You shouldn't have put that up quite quick, but who's our principal character? Abraham. What is the story of Abraham about? Give me one word that starts with a P. They ever call you to go on TV, Bill? Don't do it. He answered before he heard the rest of the question, of course. But what is the one word starting with a P that we should most associate with Abraham? Promise is what I'm looking for. Now, faith is right, and so many of these others that you would think are absolutely right, but the P is for the promise, because sin had taken over the world and it had to be destroyed. And then sin had changed all languages on earth. We're starting all together over again. And the next story we hear is in Abraham, and that begins in chapter 12, verse 1, I'd like for you to turn over there now and read it. In Genesis chapter 12, this is, brethren, really the whole rest of your Bible. In the 12th chapter of Genesis, the Lord had said to Abram, name hadn't been changed yet, father of many nations, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I'll bless you and make your name great. You shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you. And in you all of the families of the earth shall be what? Shall be blessed. That promise in varying forms, there's more than one promise there, of course, And those promises are going to be reinforced again and again and again. It's easy to remember. That's chapter 12, 13, 15, 17. All have that promise repeated to Abraham. And then it's going to be repeated to Abraham's descendants. As we are reading through the Bible, hoping to finish in 18 months every word that's in it in chronological order, what we are seeing now is God will what with regard to that promise? He's going to keep it. He'll be faithful to that promise. And that being the case then, Abraham will become the father of many nations, not just the one, but he's been called out to be the father of what nation in particular? The Jews. And of these people who will all be his descendants, God is going to make of them an example to all the world. That example begins with, I, God, have good things for you. I want you to be happy on every level, in the physical world, but most especially in the spiritual world as well. I, God, will use you if you will be humble servants of mine. I, God, will fulfill my promises and my plans. And when I do, if you will play your role faithfully, then all is going to be well with you. So for now 13 chapters, we are told about not only Abraham, but also about, of course, Isaac and Ishmael and the descendants after them. So before I put the next line up, who's our third major character in the book of Genesis? That is correct. Okay, it's Jacob. Down here, there are the Chaldees. Abraham was told to leave what? Everything. He did. He came up here about 1,000 miles and came in to a promised land where he never had anything more than a what to call his own. Pardon me? Well, that's right. But I mean, as far as an actual property goes, he was a wanderer. He was a sojourner. That's definitely true. But he did own one piece of property. What was it? It was a cave, and that was used as a cemetery, the burial ground. So, what was God asking of Abraham? Leave everything, trust me entirely, go where I'll tell you, and now, in Abraham, how much of the old ways are being maintained? How much of the old ways remain? There's nothing. He left all that back in the Chaldees. And so, God starts entirely over, and when he does, God then selects this man Jacob to play a huge role in the succeeding chapters. So, 12 chapters now devoted to this man Jacob, whose name, by the way, has changed to what? Israel, which means what? There's about 80 different definitions, but they all revolve around the same thing. What does Israel mean? Wrestled with God or prevailed with God because of an event in which he actually wrestled with an angel somewhat successfully, though he didn't sustain an injury in the process. God renamed him Israel. This is the name that will not only be a personal name for him, but what ever after? The name of God's people, Israel. The people who have this intimate relationship with God are Israelites, right? Then, the last part, all the way to chapter 50, who's our principal player? How many sons did Jacob have? He had 12 sons. They are the 12 tribes of Israel. God is fulfilling his promise to Abraham. He miraculously has the son Isaac. As the generations develop, they do get the land that had been promised, Genesis 12 and elsewhere. And one of these members of the 12 tribes, the head of the tribe, Joseph, this man, how well was he treated by his brothers? Horribly. Why? Because he was faithful to his God. He received a vision. He told his brothers and his parents about the vision twice. And what did he get for it? Slavery, and then lied about, winds up in prison, and then much to his surprise, finds himself where? Number two in all of Egypt. So in the last part of Genesis 50, we are specifically told he's talking to his brothers, he's forgiving his brothers, he is saving his brothers' lives, the whole family moves over into Egypt, and Joseph says, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, and saved all of these people. So now, there's your outline of Genesis. We had, in Genesis, a book of beginnings, and the most important of all of those beginnings is a promise that has to do with a chosen people who will be uniquely God's. And if the people and all the surrounding nations bless that man Abraham and his people, then they will be blessed as well. If they curse them, they'll be cursed. God has established great separation between his people and everybody else as an example of service to their God. Now, what do you see in Genesis? Name a few for me personal sins. What's the first? Adam and Eve. They eat the forbidden fruit. What's the next sin we read about? Murder. Cain kills Abel. We get to Babel. What do we have? Rebellion. Okay? Then, name for me a few sinners. Was Abraham absolutely sinless? Why? He lied. You know, he misrepresented his wife. Got in all kinds of trouble over that. Okay? Then came Isaac. Paragon of virtue, right? Not hardly. And we have Jacob and Esau. How'd they get along? Terrible, all kinds of sin, and one was going to kill the other. So Jacob has to flee from Esau, and where does he go? Padanaram, and when he gets up there, to a guy named Laban, and Laban, paragon of virtue, right? You cheated me on my way in time, you know, it was just nothing but trouble. So Genesis is the book of beginnings, but unhappily, brethren, when you're talking about human beings, Genesis is also the story of a whole lot of sin. I guess I should have put this up first, as we've just been doing, is naming a few. And so we pointed out, brethren, this is the great problem that starting in Genesis, God is going to be resolving. By the time we get into our New Testament, you know, a year and a half from now, what we're going to be seeing is the ultimate and complete resolution of that problem. But just as kind of a sidelight, we also learn about the composition of Moses' book, Genesis, because there's so much sin in it. What does that tell you about the book as opposed to these all the other books that are being written back in those ancient times? It's true. I use the expression warts. Warts and all. It doesn't gloss over. It doesn't try to make everybody ideal and perfect. It's no mythical story whatsoever. It's the story of sin, and everybody's involved in it. And its punishment can be global. It is so bad. But as you're dealing with all that sin, what are you also finding out about God? He is merciful. He loves those people. Genesis is the beginning of all of God's plans for mankind. Which brought us then to Exodus. So picking up immediately after that, we come into the book of Exodus. Now who's the one guy in Exodus? Yeah, that's Moses. The whole book is about Moses. We have 19 chapters that I'm calling the history of freedom, because we get the birth of Moses, we get the early life of Moses, we get the call of Moses, we get Moses coming back and having this amazing confrontation with Pharaoh. Time after time after time after time, what is Moses saying? God told me, Pharaoh, to tell you, let my people go. And what did Pharaoh say?
No.
No. And then he said, yes. And then he said, no. And then he said, yes. And he said, no. And then he said, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. You know, because every time when these plagues hit, he would see his helplessness after the first few that the magicians had been able to duplicate somehow. He you know, realizes, I've got to call this off. So, okay, they can go. And then immediately, what does he do? Changed his mind. This is referred to as the what of Pharaoh's heart. the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. Who hardened his heart? Pharaoh hardened his heart. Scripture frequently says, who hardened his heart? God hardened his heart. Clearly a contradiction in Scripture, isn't it? No, because both were involved in the what? Hardening of Pharaoh's heart. Excuse me. There, time I turn that mic on. Sorry about that. It's a tip. Okay, so your first 19 chapters there really read as history. And then what do we get? Now comes the law. And brethren, from chapter 20 to the end of Exodus, what are we talking about? Law. In Leviticus, what are we talking about? Law. In Numbers, what are we talking about? Well, that's true. Okay, it is Numbers. There's two places where you get all these lists of numbers, and that's how the book, you know, got the name. But it has also got a lot of history that is not found in Exodus. So where Leviticus is just all law, Numbers is going to give us some fascinating, you know, stories as well. But primarily, that's about law. This time, I think it's just that smoke that's in the air. Look out your windows. It's just awesome today how brown that air is and the irritation. But okay, so it's all about law. But particularly, in the last part of Exodus, the laws all revolve around what? This was last week's lesson. Okay? The tabernacle and the priests. So, starting in chapter 25 and for 16 chapters, in enormous detail, what do we get in the last nearly half of Exodus? That temple was really something, wasn't it? Was it beautiful? What did it require to build it? To be that beautiful, what does it mean? I'm sorry, go ahead. I can hear, but what I'm looking for is, could you just read the words and build one today? No, because in addition to the words, what did God repeatedly say had to happen to build that tabernacle? Inspiration of artisans that God selected and moved to be able to produce this thing. It is a divine structure. It is not human. The plans for it are divine. The execution of it is divine. And its value in human terms, financial terms, is what? Just ginormous. Okay? Enormous amount of gold and silver, other precious metals, and then coming to the priests and their outfits, what do we find on the high priest, for instance? Precious jewels. Okay, so vast amounts of information in Exodus are devoted to the construction and then the operation of the tabernacle. What is Leviticus all about? Next book. Some of you I know started reading. Leviticus is named after Levi. Who is Levi? Yeah, one of the 12 sons of Israel, but then his descendants will be the only ones that are allowed to be priests in Israel. So every single guy that ever had anything to do with this tabernacle was from what tribe? And they got a whole book just for them. Now, we talked about it last week. The latter part of Exodus, after you get out of those first 19 chapters, which is very interesting history, is what? Pretty dry. And we see that it is. And partly that just is, brethren, because to really appreciate the beauty of that thing, what did you need? Inspired men to bring that thing into reality. Okay, so it's kind of hard for us. And do we practice any of this today? No. So get ready. What is Leviticus all about? A great deal more of the same thing. Now, why are we reading this stuff that we don't practice and nobody has for 2,000 years.
I think it's just going to speak to the old law of the career. We learn from the old law how God feels about things, about everything.
Amen.
That, even though that law may have died, God still feels the same way about everything.
Okay. What is going on inside the tabernacle itself? And Bill is exactly right. We're not doing any of this anymore. But what do you learn in this? What do you learn about God? Are you chummy with Him? You want to talk to Him about being daddy? No. What is God as you look at the tabernacle? He is separate. And He is holy. What's the very thing inscribed on the high priest's head? Holy to the Lord. Everything about this is awesome. Everything about this is glorious. Everything about this, though, has to do with separation. Who gets to come into the presence of God? One man. How often? Once a year. What does he do? That is the Day of Atonement. So, brethren, Genesis is the book of beginnings, riddled throughout with what? Sin. And its solutions. First in punishment, global flood, and then in promise for a future blessing that all the world could share in. And now we come into Exodus. And with Exodus, what do we see about God's people in relation to Egypt? Separation. You've got to get away from all that. Look, that's all very appealing. You'd really like to have it back. One, God is angry. And 3,000 should die just to begin to try and punish for that problem with the golden calf and all the complaining that went on various times that they had failed their God. So what we see, brethren, is glory and majesty. But we also see separation. God is behind how many fabrics here? Four of them. Okay? And then there's a curtain separating this tabernacle, so only one man and only once a year can go back in there. What do you learn about God's purity, about God's holiness, about God's highness, about God's separation from us merely humans in this sacrificial system? And that's the next thing that I wanted to get to. Not that one yet, but that was the courtyard. I was going to make this point. What's going on in the courtyard? Okay. What is required in this system for sin? Sacrifice is right, but be more specific. What do you need to cover sin? You need blood. You need death. You need to pay with life. This animal life is representative of the cost of sin. Now, you read it. Thousands of animals. Tens of thousands of animals. What would be rivers of blood? It takes a tribe of men to be free. We talked at great length about how difficult this is. And it's just, you know, constant that sacrifice has to take place to atone for sin. So what is Leviticus all about? An elaboration upon all of this so that the people are most deeply impressed with the glory of their God, the horror of sin, the wall of separation that produces, and the need for blood to atone. Okay. Now, I made a mistake last week, and I wanted to clarify that, and I don't know, maybe it was Donna that brought it up. Somebody asked me about it later, but I misspoke. And I said that by day, this was a pillar of, I said, smoke. What was it actually? It's actually a cloud. So I do want to clarify that. It is a pillar of cloud by day, a pillar of what by night?
Fire.
And what is this called? There's another term for it. The Shekinah. Thank you. The Shekinah. The by tribes, they camped around this thing. Whenever that Shekinah moved over from the temple in any direction, what did all the people do? Pack their stuff and move. They're going to spend a total of 40 years out there in that wilderness. So, What does this tell you about God? If that was telling you about God, what does that tell you about God?
40 years. And how are they being fed? Manna. Okay. Well, that's all it's about we've been talking about now for 30 minutes. Today is what we call our Jubilee. I want to give everybody, every so often, about every 20 weeks, a break to try to catch up. Now, last week, I asked you, how many of you are still on track, still keeping up with the schedule? Okay? Well, go ahead. I'll ask you, how many of you are actually caught up? Okay, higher percentage now. How many of you are still behind? Go ahead and get it. That's hot. Okay. All right, look. This is hard. I know it is. So I've done it before in a single year. I've never gone to 2 years. But we'll think about that in the next few minutes. And at the end of the class, I want to ask you about that pace. So right now, for Leviticus, though, as you start your reading for next week, everybody please turn over to page 116 if you have a copy of the Chronological Study Bible. And if you don't, lean in on somebody there because I do want to read this transition on Leviticus. So here now is what will be coming. We'll read the first paragraph in the transition on page 116, the book of Leviticus. Continues God's covenant instructions on Mount Sinai begun in Exodus 20. The name Leviticus comes from the many laws and regulations of the book that concern the rights and the duties of the priests who are of the tribe of Levi. Now skip the next paragraph, go to the third. The entire book of Leviticus is set in a relatively brief period of time. Only a month and a half passes between the erection of the tabernacle at Mount Sinai and the Hebrews' departure from Sinai. The tabernacle finished on the first day of the first month in the second year of the Exodus. That's Exodus 40:17. Departure was on the 20th day of the second month of the same year. Depending on whether the Hebrews left Egypt in the 15th or 13th century, remember we're not sure about the dates, the second year of the Exodus would be either 1445 or 1274 or thereabouts. Next paragraph. The content of Leviticus, however, extends beyond this short month and a half in the wilderness. Many of the laws clearly pertain to a time after the Israelites had entered their land. For instance, the laws for planting fields and cleansing houses. Partly for this reason, some suggest that at least the current form of the book was actually composed later than its content would suggest, perhaps from several different law codes. Of course, those who accept the traditional attribution of the first five books of the Bible to Moses disagree and understand these passages simply as laws given for a future time. Who wrote the five books of Moses? Who's in Grant's tomb? They are written by Moses. And I can be most certain of that. Jesus will make reference to this. See? And so we have confirmation that Moses wrote these books. So there are always those that are going to have less faith, in Bible writings and in these books. But we certainly stand with those in the last part of that paragraph who are certain that Moses wrote the book, and therefore certain that while these laws do speak of things that they, like homes, that they won't have for 40 years, nonetheless, God gave them those laws at that time, and when they got their homes, they'd be able to obey them. Last paragraph. The animal sacrifices described so carefully in Leviticus fit properly in the historical context of the book. Animal sacrifice was universal in ancient Near Eastern religion. So, Israel's sacrifice of animals is hardly surprising. More striking, though, is the absolute prohibition against the equally common practice of child sacrifice. So, all nations sacrifice, and by the way, you heard me say this just a gazillion times, has there ever been found any nation, anywhere, at any time in all the world's history that did not worship something? Never. In human history, altogether, unbroken fact, all peoples, you've got your exceptions and your atheists, of course, but every nation
They believe in God of some kind. Okay? And in most all of these religions, what do you find? They deal with what? Our relation to God. How to worship Him, how to relate to Him.
So when you read a paragraph like that, you know, it's not that the Israelites were copying anything from these people. They were leading the way. But every nation worships something, because Roman letter tells us what? That which is known about God is? It's obvious. He made it known to them. Anybody without excuse? Or with excuse? Not a single one. There is a God. Okay, so Leviticus is about the Levites. After that comes Numbers. Everybody now turn over to the transition on page 146. 146. First paragraph. In the Hebrew Bible, this book is entitled In the Wilderness. That's the book, the title in the Hebrew Old Testament, that language. The name Numbers comes from the Greek translation, and then translated into our English, and refers specifically to census figures given in Numbers 12 and then again in 26. But the content of the book of Numbers is diverse, moving back and forth between lists and laws and narratives, making it hard to identify any single outline or structure. The book begins in the same vein as Leviticus, with more divine instructions from Mount Sinai, still stressing priestly matters. These laws conclude in chapter 10, and the Israelites set out for the promised land. I'll skip to the last paragraph at the very bottom of that page. The narratives of Numbers 10 through 25 take up where those of what book leave off? Exodus. And in many ways parallel the accounts of Israel's grumbling against God in Exodus 16. Indeed, the people appear even more dissatisfied in Numbers. And in the end, God decrees that this complaining generation, including Moses himself, would not enter the promised land. Question. You've got a book of Genesis that tells you all the beginnings, and especially about the promises. You've got a book of Exodus that shows that God will free you miraculously from your captivity. And that, of course, is a figure of freedom from sin. We have these awesome stories of God's presence, how He is portrayed in the tabernacle and all of that sacrificial system. And then every day and every night, what are they looking at? The Shekinah. And how faithful are they? Aren't we an amazing people? These things called humans. These books of Moses are about God's glory and man's what? Weakness and failure and sin. And hopefully, they're designed to help us appreciate that while we have these faults and flaws and weaknesses, is it still possible to serve your God? Absolutely. And then we'll be reading Deuteronomy. That word means what? Deuteros means second. Namos means law. It is second law. So what do you suppose it is? It's a recap of what we've already seen. So, this is our Jubilee night. So there's no reading for this week. Letting everybody get caught up. Hopefully, you know, you got yourself at that time. And next week, we're going to start with Leviticus, or you'll be reading already probably in Leviticus. Okay. Five books written by what man? Moses. To tell the story of the beginnings, especially of sin, and of God's solution to it. And in such enormous detail that while we may find it dry, if, as I think Bill suggested a little while ago, if you will faithfully read every word, try to put yourself back in those times and ask yourself, if I had to do all of these sacrifices all of my life and experience the deprivations and problems, you know, of the wilderness wanderings, what would I have learned about God and man? What would I learn? Now then, in the last few minutes that we got,
our first jubilee. We've got quite a few more that are going to come. I hope you'll be able to catch up. But does anybody at this point have any questions, feedback, concerns, whatever? Help me to help you. What are you noticing? What do you like? What do you not like? Perfect. Here we go. Ralph.
What about Abraham? In Galatians, the third chapter, on the with the last there, it's talking about law, which in Ephesians 2, and it was to bring us to Christ. And when Christ came, we're no longer unto him, no longer under the law. But then we're baptized in Christ. There's called Christians. Then the very last thing there, if we are Christ, we are Abraham's seed, according to the promise.
Mm-hmm.
That's a comment.
Okay. Yeah, and what Ralph is saying, brethren, when we're done with the Old Testament, are we supposed to go, well, we're not Jews, so forget it? What is Galatians in chapter 3 going to do at some great length? And so will Romans, and so will Hebrews. It's going to resurrect all of this so that we can appreciate we as Christians are what in relation to the promises of the old law? Heirs according to promise. Abraham's seed. We are its fulfillment. Will you then have a better understanding of Christianity for having spent this time in the Old Testament with laws that we don't even practice today? Yes. It'll be much clearer. Greg, could you get
here? Yeah. Along that line, I believe the tabernacle was an illustration of the church. You know, they had to wash before they went into the holy place, and now the church is the holy place. We're baptized before we are in the church. And when we're in the church, the holy place, there's the show bread, and now the Lord's Supper. And there, you know, there's all these types and antitypes that correspond with each other. It's all just a lesson on what we have today.
Great. I don't know if y'all heard this. The greatest use of the terms, type and anti-type. These are the formal terms for what you find in the Old Testament that will be representative of something greater. Okay? And in many cases, and we'll leave it to you to sort all of those out, but in many cases, what are you seeing? What you are seeing is a direct corollary between some activity in the Old Testament and something in the New. Who's the high priest in the Old Testament? Has to come from what tribe? Levi. Okay, who's the high priest in the New Testament? Well, Jesus is here. Who are the priests in the Old Testament? Well, the rest of the Levites. Who are the priests in the New Testament? We are. And it goes on and on and on, as Greg's been pointing out. So, I guess what I'm doing in this class, I'm trying to give you time to catch up, want to do a review, but also just, you know, kind of want to forewarn you, I think all of you read this material before, it's hard reading, but it's very valuable reading. Don't go in, you know, with a negative view or shrugging your shoulders, it doesn't matter to us. As Greg just pointed out, it does, it should. It'll be enlightening. Just, you know, push on through. Carol.
I talked to you a while back about when Moses saw God, God said he can't see his glory, he hid it in the cleft, and so he passed. But you have before it says that he talked to him friend to friend, and then you also have people who had talked to God, and so there seems to be a quandary about how that all fits together.
Yeah, Carol, you were not the only one that asked me about that, too. The expression face to face has caused a lot of problems, you know, for biblical interpreters, because we are told that you cannot see God and what?
Live.
And you have examples where Moses has to be put where he's going to behold the glory of God. He's got to go back in a cleft, and then what's the only thing that God's going to show? You know, it's only his back. And then it says it spoke with him face to face. Well, it just said it couldn't. And then it says it did. You know, well, did he? Okay? Now, I want to ask you all. Am I speaking to you face to face?
No.
All right, let me ask you this. Are we communicating directly?
Yeah.
What's the only thing? You couldn't see me. Okay? What I think the expression face-to-face has to do with, in those places where we are told that somebody had those conversations, no, you couldn't actually behold all the glory of God and live. But the conversation that was taking place was what? An actual conversation. We could hear each other. There was no prophet in between. There was no book that you're reading to get this information. What were the people hearing? The voice of God. Now, if I get on the phone with somebody and I say, I had that conversation face to face with them. Is there a very real sense in which that is true? I didn't see the face, but what do I mean? It's not hearsay. I didn't read something they wrote. What happened? Direct communication. Okay? Anybody else? This is your night. And we'll have several more, but it's the ketchup, you know, nothing. Anything that's bugging you, wonder about, Bill.
Two different things. I've always got a look, it seems like I always forget, where Aaron came from. Well, he was one of the sons of Levi. But Moses was also, and many times, well, Moses didn't fulfill the office of a priest. He acted as the intercessor between Israel and God. In fact, he saved Israel's life a couple of times because of that. And the other one was the death of Sarah and her burial. In Exodus 23:17 and Genesis 23:17 and 18, Abraham actually got a field with a cave from the description. It may have been a bigger than a city lot, a fairly good-sized little piece of land. So he actually did have a little bit of land that he could set his foot on.
That's correct. That's what I'm saying. It was not a home. It was not a place to live. But that was the only land that the family owned was the cemetery. Okay, now I do want to take just the last minute, though, you know, and ask you this. The one thing that especially I need to know, is this pace too fast or too slow? How many think that this really ought to take 2 years? Okay? How many of you think that a year and a half is too slow? That a year would have been better? Okay, great. That's what I wanted to hear. Okay. But, you know, as I told you, you'll find in here a 2-year plan and a 1-year plan in the back of the book. I made my own plan at a year and a half. Fifth time I've done this. So we're settling on that. But it just, if you're really struggling with it, you know, talk to me about it. But it looks like we're doing okay. This jubilee really helped, didn't it? I see a lot of you that weren't caught up did get caught up. Okay? So, any last comment or question, I'll let you go for tonight. You get 5 extra minutes. Anybody?